Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 19 of the MV Red Podcast. I'm Michael Metzinger. Joining me is our great co-host, Dane Davis, and we're thrilled this evening to be joined by Rich Barris, pollster, one of the few that got it right back in 2016. So we are absolutely thrilled for him to join us this evening to talk a little bit about his Rust Belt polling that he just conducted for the Epoch Times, and then kind of focus, just because, you know, Dane and I are based here in Ohio, to focus maybe a little bit more on the Ohio side and how that's looking. But Rich, you want to quickly introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit, about Big Data Poll, as well as People's Pundit Daily, and then maybe your show as well.
Yeah, sure. So, I'm the director at Big Data Poll, and also at the election forecast model at People's Pundit Daily, which was driven by Big Data Poll for years. And doing some first AM standard time, typically Monday through Friday, but Monday, we've been doing What Are the Odds with Barnes at 2 p.m. So, yeah, we can tell you what, we got a pretty interesting thing we're doing this year. The Rust Belt poll is probably one of the more interesting polls that I've done in the last couple of years. So the results that came out just a little bit ago, a couple hours ago, pretty exciting. I think there's a lot in there for a lot of people to, you know, to digest.
Absolutely.
Cool. So, I'm so excited. I'm going to jump all over. For those of you who don't know within the politics world, Rich Barris was the guy. He's at People's_Pundit. And back in 15 and 16, right, the entire polling world, everybody was like, Hillary's going to win 98%, 99%, 97%, right? And there were these few outliers that you had to dig deep into Twitter to find that were like, hey, guys, this doesn't make sense. This is wrong. You guys are off, right? And this is what's really crucial. You know, the big pundits, right? Big, you've heard of big government. You've heard of big business. Big pundits were like, these guys are wrong. Don't listen to them. They don't know what they're talking about. But this guy that we have on that I was following 5 years ago, 4 years ago, Rich Barris, called the 2016 election, right? And we're interviewing him. So I just want to say thank you. We're really excited to have you on. This is just a podcast about Ohio and MV Red and the dream of the Mahoning Valley turning red. And you were the guy that saw it. So again, thank you very much for coming on. We're really excited to have you here.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And thanks for having me on, you know, anytime, really. That was, I was saying before, it was a heck of a time. You know, there's a lot of people out there now that you'll hear and you'll see on Twitter, you know, I had Trump win, and I had, as far as I know, we are with, you know, Robert Cahaly over at Trafalgar. We wanted one of the few that actually put out public, for public consumption data. And it was a stressful time, because, you know, I knew in my gut that we were doing something others weren't. And I just couldn't understand where they were coming up with some of this stuff. And I think, you know, just to roll right into it, I think this year it might actually be worse. The polling industry has challenges that are legitimate, serious challenges. They recognize it when the cameras aren't on, right? So when the Nate Silvers of the world, they're not in this industry, you know, they're glorified poll readers. That's what they do for a living. They're not professionals. And in this industry, we all knew there was a problem. Everybody did. And in the media world, they just continue to sell this stuff to people like it's gospel, as if they know for certain. They don't know, folks. That I'm here to tell you for certain. They don't know. And they resist the change because you kind of nailed it. It is just like we have a big government, a big media, corporate this, corporate that. It's big money. Media, not just the polling, but the political consultant class. It's big money, folks, and they're not going to let it go. They don't want to change the status quo. It's good for them.
Everything you said makes sense, but let me tell you my story with polls. And Michael, I'm sorry. I'm so excited. I'm just jumping right into it. This is awesome. You know, back in 2012, I don't know if you guys remember 2012, there was this thing where they were talking about unskewing the polls.
Yeah.
And they would say, Obama's up by 4 points, but when you do a real turnout, Romney's winning. And I believe that. I bought that hook, line, and sinker. And then the 2012 election, Obama won in a blowout, right? So I was burned. I was jaded. And then 2016, you had the polls come out. Hillary's leading by 10 points, 15 points, 5 points, 4 points, whatever it was, really ridiculous stuff on both the national level and the state polls. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to be that guy. I was wrong in 2012. And the polls were wrong, right? And then in 18, there were some Republicans and conservatives that were like, no, it's going to be a red wave, not a blue wave. And Democrats won. So in 2020, and I'm going to turn it over to you, we're seeing polls that show Biden 6 points ahead, 7 points ahead. Ohio, he's supposed to be 5 points ahead in Ohio. So we've got that on one side. And then my gut, and we live in Northeast Ohio, and you know this area probably extremely well. And this is an area that's going to vote Trump. And if Mahoning County, Trumbull County vote Trump, I'm telling you, Biden can't win Ohio. It's impossible. So what is going on, Rich? What makes sense to this for me?
Right. So, you know, it's kind of just taking it real quick back to 2012. This is why when it comes to election forecasting, why those models that you see so and hear so much about are really garbage. They're not real models. So the fundamentals of politics and election forecasting, really polls don't weigh that heavily on it. Polls have been wrong in elections. They had a good streak for a while. But in truth, there have been blunders we can point to forever. But the fundamentals never fail us. So the fundamentals in 2018 told us it is difficult. Barring some significant, you know, 9/11 event, it is difficult for an incumbent, first term incumbent party to hold on to control of especially the lower chamber. And actually, in 2018, Republicans outperformed history. They did. You'd have to go back to John Kennedy to see that kind of performance in the Senate. They lost in slightly higher than average number of seats in the U.S. House. But again, history told us that would likely be the outcome. History also told us that it would likely be very difficult for Hillary Clinton to succeed President Obama after two terms, especially since he was well-liked, but his agenda was not. And then, you know, I mean, we could just keep going back. 2014, history told us that that was going to be a red wave. It told, you know, that in 2010 was an even stronger argument. The map was just a little, it was very favorable to Republicans in 2014. So you watch that pundit class and they seem to only be wrong on one side of the aisle, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And Nate Silver is never wrong when it favors Republicans. Okay. I mean, it's a fraud. It's not a real model. He's a poll reader. That's all he is. And then he smears other people who call him out on it. But
he's been doing a lot of it lately.
Yeah. And he's been doing a lot of it. And he's doing it to Robert over at Trafalgar too now, just like he did it to me and others, you know? So this is what he does because he really can't stand up against people who are professionals, because you know it when you see it in this industry. You know these people. We all know each other. It's not like, you know, it's a very tight-knit group, and you're not really invited to the party, which is some of the problems with some of these pollsters. They're not invited, you know, so they're not welcome with open arms, especially if they tell them to do something a little bit different, and especially if they have success when they don't. So, you know, basically in 2012, we heard that very same argument from the Republican establishment. You know, you got to unskew the polls. And party ID is a very long argument about whether or not you should wait for party ID. We don't. And before 2012, it was never an argument really that had the majority of us. But, you know, Fox News and the like, they wanted Romney to win. So they did that and they pushed that. And even the Dana Perinos. So really don't feel that bad because a lot of people did. Right. And then but in truth, the fundamentals said Barack Obama would win. And somebody like Mitt Romney was probably the worst possible candidate that you could, because if you're going to try to make a choice where you're going to have a narrative battle, a battle of justifications, what really decides elections, what, how do people make rational policy choices? That was the worst candidate to put up against Barack Obama. I mean, he was like a technocrat, you know, I mean, it's the worst thing you could do against a guy.
Totally. Bain Capital.
I mean, the word, right. And they murdered him on it, right? Vulture in Ohio, you guys, I don't have to tell you how effective those ads were with that gentleman who lost his health insurance, his wife, right? Died of cancer. That worked in a state like Ohio, of course. And in the Rust Belt in general. This time around, coronavirus is an unprecedented event, but history told us, regardless of his approval rating in the NBC poll or the ABC poll or the even worse Fox News poll, it, regardless of all of that, before coronavirus, Donald Trump was an odds-on favorite, and he was going to clobber Joe Biden. It would have been a blowout. Now it's a race, and this race will be decided on whether or not, because what we see is that coronavirus is falling. And if it continues to fall precipitously, Donald Trump will win. If they can keep it hanging in the balance, then he's going to have a tough time. So that would be the unprecedented event that they would need. In your state, I mean, I know other people have different results, but we actually underestimated Donald Trump in 2016 in your state. And we did so because we didn't believe that those ancestral Democrats in southeastern Ohio were really going to go for him like that. I mean, we saw the margin, but we didn't think they were going to come out in the way that they did, the numbers that they did. So, you know, it was more like a Trump plus five instead of a Trump plus nine, you know, where it should have been. This time, we're going to believe them. They're the most juiced voter right now in the Rust Belt is a working man, and a working man who lives mostly in rural America. And they are going to be, at least from our point of view, they are going to be a disproportionately higher share of the electorate than we may think. You know, I don't want to give anybody, you know, tell, if you guys support Trump and people watching support Trump, always run like you're 10 points behind. Always run like you're 10. But our raw data, and I'll be honest, I'll tell you guys, our raw data was actually D plus four, and he still had a monster lead. Now, Ohio is not going to be D plus four. All right. So what I suspect they did not do was get the distribution that we got. We polled every corner of that state. We oversampled all over the place. He's got, and just looking right now, you know, I mean, I'll peek at it. I got my browser right in front of me. In Pennsylvania, he's getting 20% of the black vote. In Ohio, he's getting 18% of the black vote. You know, he's actually winning working women in the state of Ohio. So, and that is minorities included. Now, Ohio doesn't have a large minority population, but it's a big enough margin where you can even include black women, and he still is winning working women. It actually, I mean, I'll make the prediction right now. If something doesn't change, he's going to win Ohio by a bigger margin than he's going to win Iowa this time. And we're seeing some indications that there, maybe what happened tonight will change this. And I'm referring to the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but there are some rural, more conservative voters who kind of hear Joe Biden's argument with about decency and attitude. And they voted for Trump the first time around, but they don't really like his style, and they would like to see somebody who's more polished. That resonates in some areas of Ohio and Iowa. In Iowa and then Wisconsin, parts of Wisconsin actually look a lot more like Iowa than they do in the rest of the Rust Belt. So that may change though tonight, because now the stakes have risen, and it has really upped the stakes for those voters, and they're going to have to decide whether or not their values matter more than their, you know, because these are not stupid voters, and they understand, contrary to what the media says about them, they are not stupid voters, and they understand what it means to have an open Supreme Court seat out like that. So it is possible that that changes, but there are some voters, whereas in Ohio, these are working people, and they don't really give rats anything about what the media has to say. You know, you're a bad person because you support Donald Trump. Yeah, well, my wages are up, so kiss it. You know, they right. don't care. They just don't care. They're not as susceptible like the other voters are.
Michael, this is my last question, and I'll pause. But so here's the question now that I have. I can tell you, sir, and Michael will back me up on this. there's a little chance that Donald Trump loses Ohio. So everything that you're saying makes intuitive sense to me. And I'm not saying that as a conservative or as a Republican. The votes simply are not there. Yeah. Yes, Cleveland and Columbus and Toledo are going to go blue, and the suburbs might get a little more purpley, but it's not enough votes. But here are the two things I'm worried about, and then I'll stop. The one thing is I'm from North Trumbull County, okay, which is just north of Mahoney. I'm sure you know it well. Yep. It's a working class area. Right now, though, I live outside of Sugar Ring Falls, which is this really – it's a yuppie, for lack of a better term, area.
Yep.
I drive around Trumbull County. It's all Trump. This is it used to be the Democratic Central, right? All Trump. I drive around Sugar Ring Falls. Every single house has a Biden sign. So the affluent voters are moving strongly to the Democrats,
yeah,
and the working class voters are moving to the Republicans. You just need to go to those two areas to see. So question number one is are the Democrats' gains with called the yuppie voter, the affluent voter, are they being offset by the Republican gains with the working class? Who's net ahead? That's one. And then two, with the Sun Belt, I have no visibility into the Sun Belt. Arizona's changing. Texas is changing. And it's not because of Hispanics necessarily. It's because there are a lot of affluent Californians moving there. Have those states turned permanently blue, especially Arizona is the one I'm really worried about. What's going on there? So I'll stop. And then, Michael, you asked the next question. I'm so excited. This is awesome.
Yeah, so that is the story of this election. And to people who I see on Twitter and elsewhere who make these comments – comparing it to 2016, well, Trump did this in 2016, you know, that it is not 2016. And the coalition that is voting for Donald Trump is not the coalition that voted for him in 2016. And it's kind of funny. And I made this comment to one of my friends is, you know, their family is a Republican donor family. And it's just, this is what the John Kasich, which you guys in Ohio, so he's a great example. This is what they wanted for all of these years, right? So didn't they want to win 16-18% of the black vote? Didn't they want 40% of the Hispanic vote? So here they are, and here's Trump really now approaching in some of these states GWB levels among Hispanics, you know, because he did not win 44%, won about 40%. You know, so Trump is about at 36, 38 in Florida, even higher, and they're unhappy because he's not, you know, he's not, he's just not their kind of guy.
Right.
It's weird. It's very strange. So that will be the story of this election. And somewhere like Ohio, you're not. This is, again, one guy's opinion. It's a different demographic in that state. And there aren't enough of those yuppies that you're talking about to make a difference. And in fact, one of the interesting things we found in this poll is it's not really post-grads. The media has been like making it all about it is, of course, that's his worst group. But men with an advanced college degree aren't even that bad. You know, it's women who go against him horribly, and then especially minority women who go against him horribly if they have a postgraduate degree. In Ohio, they're going to be about 15% of the electorate together, men and women. So 16%. So that's why you saw in 2018. Even Iowa went a little bit more toward Democrats, right? And all of these states, Democrats did better. In Ohio, it didn't work out for them. And the polls were terrible. The best thing they could claim in Ohio is that Sherrod Brown hung on to his seat. And I am saying this hand to God, we polled it. If Josh Mandel would have stayed in that race, Sherrod Brown would be the retired incumbent senator from Ohio. He would have lost, and he would have lost badly by about 7 points. The polls were abysmal, right? USA Today, Brown by 20 or 19 points, some ridiculous margin. Not a single media university poll had Mike DeWine, your now governor, winning that race. Marist had a tiny 2-point lead in June, and they herded like everybody else. And DeWine was not favored to win that race. Polling in Ohio is difficult. And in 2016, in the Rust Belt in general, it is, because there's just this group of men. They don't want to talk no matter what you do. You can definitely not call them on a live caller interview like media loves to do. to their cell phone after they're done at work at 6 o'clock at night. They will hang up on you. They will get mad. I should release some of these, like, cause we record them. You know, I should release what people will say to you when you call them at 6:15 when they're about to eat a meatloaf. All right. And you call them, you stupid, you know, I'll vote how I want to vote. It's none of your business. And they'll hang up on you. But if you try to reach them online, it may be a little bit, it may take some persistence, you know, but if you try to reach them online and you nudge them and you nudge them and you nudge them, especially if they like this candidate or that candidate, then they may want to do it. So it just takes persistence, but the media refuses to do that. They make, you know, it's 5 times the amount of money for a response through live caller than it is for an online panel. So, I mean, guys, we're talking money here, you know, so they don't want to give that up. And there's a lot of them in a state like Ohio, right? So, yeah. And this time we saw this in Minnesota too. Somebody from the Trump campaign was boasting about in 2018, Minnesota only went to the left because so many men stayed home and they ran off this litany thing. And at first I thought it was complete garbage. And I thought it was just the, you know, the ramblings of a losing campaign, because that's what it typically sounds like. But went home, opened up the voter file, ran the analysis. Sure enough, there are about 250,000 working white men who did not vote. And now we're polling them and they tell us point blank, they will never vote for a Republican candidate for Congress. Never. But they'll vote for Donald Trump. So it's, again, try to reach those guys and good luck, right? It took us 2 days of just constantly hammering Duluth in the northeast of Minnesota to reach some of these people. What's happening with most of these pollsters, they're just calling and they're getting their numbers that they feel is sufficient in certain areas. And then that's it. They call it quits. You know, it's no more money. They're not going to go back to NBC and get 10 grand more to, you know, oversample. They're just not going to do it. So they get that 600, whatever, 600, 650. They call it a day. Like you saw with Mom, it's 400 responses in Florida. That's our minimum sample size for Hispanics. You can't do that. I mean, it's not adequate. Right. So, there's just myriad problems, myriad, but in the end, this election, it could end up being a little bit even more shocking. Like, that's why you might see Ohio go to the right of Iowa. And, you know, maybe Trump takes the entire north of Minnesota, but he does a little bit worse in the West. It is not 2016 this time around, which brings us to Arizona, and not to circumvent at all. But
no, this is great. Yeah,
I really am dying to poll Arizona. I am, because I really am hesitant to rely on media polls for anything. You look at Maricopa County, there's one poll, and I don't want to blow him up, but he's a nice guy. But you take him out of the RCP average, and it's all of a sudden a really close race in Arizona, right? So it's not Biden plus 6 anymore. It's more like Biden plus 2, all right? Which is well within their sampling errors, which are high, because they're not reaching enough people. If you look inside of these polls, Maricopa County is not D plus 4. Maricopa County is 4.5 Republican. And I thought on primary night, it would have got a gut check and it would have went back. What they're trying to tell us is that the turnout differential is going to be so much more Democratic, favoring Democrats, that they're going to turn Maricopa 8 points the other way.
I don't see it,
folks. Yeah, because they got to get through the R plus four and a half. And then, you know, most of these polls that have Biden up in Maricopa, they're doing it by, you know, maybe it being the turnout differential is about 4 points favoring Democrats, which would be about an 8 point shift. And then independents are going heavily for Biden. There's a little trick too in Arizona, which is that independents in Maricopa do not vote the same as independents in the rest of the state. They're slightly more conservative. It took an enormous effort with a whole bunch of little tricks, you know, legal tricks. It's the Republicans' own fault. They should have saw it coming. But it took all this effort to flip Maricopa by 0.2% in a very Democratic year for Kyrsten Sinema. So my point being is, good luck with that. But I would love to poll it, because it's hard to say using their numbers. It really, you can't rely on it. You know, you have to do it yourself. Mm-hmm.
So I want to circle back here, because I know we have a few more minutes with you. In terms of your polling of Ohio, You know, I view, you know, Southwest Ohio as once a pretty strong Republican area, especially like Hamilton County, but it shifted a little bit, I think, in 2016. I look at Delaware County just to the north of Franklin County. Mm-hmm. You know, Franklin's especially a lot of educated, college educated voters there. And then you got our area, Mahoning Valley. I'm just curious, like, if in your polling, if you saw any shifts, do you see like the Mahoning Valley staying, you know, pretty fairly strong for Trump, or, you know, close? And do you see Southwest Ohio shifting more to the left? Just curious if you could share any of that with us.
Yeah, I can actually. That's a really good point. So he did not do, because Franklin is a big one. You're right. Used to be a traditionally, for people don't know, Franklin is how George W. Bush held on, you know, 2.5 points. Rob Portman, very popular in a place like that. But that's the kind of Republican that does well in Franklin County, like a Portman Republican, a John Kasich. He didn't even do that well, actually. I'm giving him a little bit too much credit. His reelection was better, but Trump wasn't that bad out there in the burbs out there. It is, though, where you see him slide. However, he just makes it up in other places because two things we saw. There's going to be, you know, sometimes not to give a, if it was today, let's say the election was today, you know, maybe Ohio was 48-52 as far as male, female last time. It may be 49-51. We've even seen Wisconsin threaten to be like 50-50, 51-59. That's unheard of. Now, I have seen Wisconsin vote slightly male before in the past. That's happened, but I've never seen Ohio do that. Maybe you break even. You know, Republicans get really lucky if they can break even in a low turnout election or something. He makes it up because that group of men is a bigger share. They're going to vote more. And I feel like it's very possible that some of these pollsters, and they did this in 2016, it's not that they're not likely voters, but they aren't high propensity voters. So if a pollster is saying, well, did you vote in the last two elections? And they say no, they're out. You know what I'm saying? So they're screened out of the likely model. Well, that actually was some of the problem in 2012 too. So some of these people who voted for Barack Obama were going to vote for him again, but maybe they didn't vote in the 2010 election. So they were not deemed to be highly likely. Yep. So they took them right out of that likely voter model. That's a mistake. And these men are definitely going to vote for him. So he makes it up in those other places. And then again, really in that southeastern region of Ohio, that is old school Democrat mining country. And it's been shifting to the right over time, but Donald Trump exacerbated that trend. He's going to perform even better over there. Somebody like a Biden is supposed to be on paper someone who can bring some of those voters back in the fold, mm-hmm. but he's not. And like I said, last time I didn't believe them, you know, but this time I'm taking their word for it. It was all the difference between Trump plus three or Trump plus five and what really happened, what was more realistic, which was 2-3 points in the other direction.
Mm-hmm. So I have another question. And if you have to go at any moment, please don't let's keep you, but I have a billion questions I could, because there's just a lot of knowledge.
Oh, go ahead. Shoot.
Okay. So here's what I'm gathering from you. The yuppie guy with the 401k, and he voted for Romney and Kasich because he likes low taxes. He's not voting Trump, right? He's going to go Biden or whatever, but he's going to vote in the congressional elections every 2 years. Cause he's, you know, he's every 2 years he's out there and his wife is out there. The truck driver that only votes in presidential elections every now and then, when he really feels motivated, he's coming and he's voting for Trump and he doesn't answer the polls. So that's the story I'm kind of getting here, is that guy won't pick up the phone. He won't talk to pollsters. The pollsters are going to get the yuppie guy, right, with the nice crew neck sweater, and he'll say, oh, I don't like Mr. Trump because he's a little too rude, right? And he'll answer every single poll. So he gets in there, but the truck driver guy is not getting in there. That's what I'm hearing from you. Is that why we're seeing Biden's plus 7 or 8? Do you think that's real? What's the real number, and is what's driving that?
Yeah. So that was a good analogy, and I would even make it a little more specific, which is it's not all of those men. Because again, I was a little bit shocked at how well he did with men who have some college and men who have a bachelor's degree. He actually did fairly well. His college group is really good for him. And the bachelor's degree was not at ugly at all. And he carries them in some of the states. It's really those little bit more post-grad, you know, kind of folks. And then really on the flip side of that, those truck drivers, those welders in states like this in the Rust Belt, there are more of them. They just tend, they don't always vote. And I think the media misses this. They, cause their world is different, right? So they don't really think about it like that. There are more welders and truck drivers and whatever you want to call it, working class. There are more of them than there are the professional who works at TD Bank or TD Ameritrade, right?
Right, right.
They don't seem to get that, right? So maybe those men are going to be 9%, you know, of the electorate. That's it. That's all. And by the way, I just took a peek. And I actually expected Franklin to be pretty bad for Trump. And I mean, he's running about, you know, I mean, it's about the same as it was in 2016, a little bit less. But when we saw some of these other places where in Michigan, for instance, in Macomb County, that was one of the biggest surprises in this poll for me personally, because I was thinking if he's going to slip, he's going to slip in Macomb, because in the southern area of Macomb where you have Warren, I was talking to somebody who's from Michigan the other day in Warren. It's not happening. So he's up 58% in Macomb. He won it by 54 and change in 2016. In Monroe, he's at 52. He won that by 58. So, I mean, 62, he won that by 58. So some of this is just, that's not those areas. So Biden just is not winning back that kind of voter. And Monroe is certainly more working class than Macomb. But in some of these, and then also too, there are some rural areas. This may be artifacts of the poll. I'm not sure. I'm a little bit nervous that it may be. So if I was doubting anything, it's that Biden is at in the rural areas. Biden is a little bit stronger than Hillary Clinton in some of these rural areas. Absolutely. If I'm wrong about anything, it's that maybe it looks that way, but it doesn't end up to be that much. I don't know. I'm looking at some of these rural numbers and I know these areas and I'm thinking it's possible. It's a little bit overblown, but in the end, I wouldn't be shocked if that was right. And we just report what people tell us, right? So in the end, I would not be shocked if that was right. I will just say this though. It could look worse for Biden than it really could have been if he doesn't get some of these voters out. So in these six Rust Belt states, if you add up the vote, how we designed this survey, Trump took it 48% compared to 48.5% compared to Hillary, who took about 46 of the combined vote. Here we're tied around, you know, 48% among likely voters. Trump's in, if you look at just registered voters, he's down by 6. Biden moves almost nowhere in that likely voter model. He goes maybe a point. It's about a point when you've got to round up to make it a point. All right. All of that comes from people who tell us initially they approve of Trump, but they don't know who they're going to vote for. Maybe I somewhat disapprove of him is the other 2%, or 2 to 4%, you know, and then you have majority, you will say they do approve of him somewhat or strongly, but they're not sure, right? Those strongly people, you can rest assured are in Trump's bank, but those somewhat numbers, when you force them and you nudge them, and you say, okay, listen, pretend it's election day and you're in the booth, right? That number comes from those people who told us initially they approve of him, but they're undecided. And then that moves over. He's more popular. Peacock Media's got to understand this. He is more popular in the Rust Belt than he is in the nation as a whole. So if you really got people, you know, in Ohio, he's above, way above water. Look, 53%, 54%. It's a solid number. In Iowa, he's at like 50, you know,
so
it's like their attitude. It's something about his attitude. It's not because the policy. And if you guys had a chance to go through the poll, you'll see they want to frack. They don't want to ban fracking. They want to frack. They want the USMCA. It's a 2-to-1 margin among people who know what the USMCA is and what it did, replace NAFTA. It's a 2-to-1 margin, you know, so it's not really an argument about policy. It's about Trump, you know, it's about him, whether, because Democrats have been on like this shame campaign for 4 years and it's working on some people. And I think some Trump supporters, they got to admit that to themselves, that it worked. You know, it didn't work in 2016, but it's working among some of these voters.
Michael, you got one? I know you got one. I have
one. No, I was just going to say, I mean, clearly, I hope, you know, people tuning in, if you don't already watch Rich's show on YouTube every day, I've learned so much in the last month watching it, where I follow Nate Silver for probably what, a decade now, or when is his big claim to fame? 2008.
Yeah.
And Rich is 100% right. He is big on poll shaming and anything it's fascinating. He goes after like Rasmussen this past week, which showed big Trump time up nationwide, which, you know, I question, but where's the equal outrage with a poll in Minnesota where Biden's up 16? It's just, he's quick to attack any poll that looks somewhat promising for Trump. And I think you're much more transparent with your numbers, your data.
Totally.
And, again, I've learned so much. And clearly from watching your show, it sounds as though this election's coming down to the rust belt. Because like you said, being somebody who's in Florida, you're pretty, you know, you believe Trump's going to win Florida, North Carolina. It's going to come down to these states. Ohio, you know, looks strong. Iowa looks strong. It sounds like from watching your show, it's going to maybe come down. Pennsylvania might be maybe one county in particular you're going to be watching on election night. What, Bucks County?
Bucks County. I was that was another stunning result. If it was today, I would give Pennsylvania to Trump. And people are like, well, how could you do that if you got his, you know, registered voters by six? Because registered voters, folks, think of registered voters. Like if you guys watch my show, think of that as the entire database when I pull up the voter file. And there are 188 million records when I get rid of some duplicates, right? There's 188 million records. Do we ever have 188 million people come up and show and lecture that? So, okay, if 188 million people showed up, Joe Biden would win the Rust Belt by six, okay? But that's not going to happen in what we call planet Earth and the real world. So we're going to have to deal with the electorate that's handed to us. And right now, I got to be honest, I really don't see that much bigger of an electorate yet. Not yet. Maybe 145 tops. And the reason why I say that is because it looks like there is a drop off in young voters. We had them, you know, 14.5% in these six states. It could fall as low as 13. It really could. They are among the least enthusiastic. If you asked a Trump voter, if his vote is a vote for Donald Trump, the candidate, or if it's a vote against Joe Biden, 80% will tell you it's for Donald Trump. Same. There are more people who will tell you it's against Donald Trump for Biden voters than it is for Joe Biden. You know, not to steal the expression from Hillary Clinton, but it's true in politics, or at least historically. Love Trump's hate. It's true. You know, and those who have the soft enthusiasm numbers, they suffer for it at the ballot box, which is why now that I've been polling for weeks and weeks, I can see why Democrats are pushing so hard for this kind of quasi mail-in election. They need to goad people. They need to pull these kinds of efforts. They cannot survive an election day election. I would debate anybody on this. If this was a regular, just election day and normal voting, Joe Biden would get killed. Among those who are extremely enthusiastic and certain, Trump leads him by 7 points in the Rust Belt. That was Hillary's biggest problem. That was her biggest. They just wouldn't go out. And in Wayne County, where he's supposed to drum up all of this, you know, African-American support that didn't come out for her, Trump is actually running about 7 points better than he did in 2016. So he's looking more like John James than he did Donald Trump circa 2016. So he got about 27% in Detroit. He's at like 34 right now. So, and Biden, by the way, is mired in all of these urban centers. In the end, that could go his way, guys. I just don't think so because, you know, you take a state like Pennsylvania. How's that going to happen in Philadelphia if he wins 20% of the black vote? We are now the third poll to show Trump with 20% in Pennsylvania. George W. Bush got 18. It's not unheard of. And Trump has made a big effort. And these working men, they're done. Some of these working black men, they're done with this identity stuff. you know, and it'll take years to chip away at it, but it's clearly working this time. It is. And I don't think they're going anywhere from now until Election Day. I think they've decided. They've had it. They're going with Trump. He gave them higher wages. You know, sometimes reality just wins over rhetoric. And some of these voters are among the most enthusiastic. You know, it doesn't really matter that they're white. You know, so that's another mistake the media makes. They could be a working Hispanic. They could be a working, you know, African American in Pennsylvania, or you know, somewhere in Michigan in Macomb County. And they're the most juiced voter right now, and the most and women with those post grad women, they'll come out, but they always come out, always do. It's not like we're gonna see this massive increase of post grad women that we never knew existed before. That's not who doesn't vote, folks. I mean, we have decades of data to tell us this, so there is no real surge either to prove that, right? So where are the new? And with the young voters, some of these polls, like the you said before, the Biden plus sixes, where are these 25%? The poll in Minnesota the other day that you referenced, that was like 30-something percent. That's crazy, guys. That's crazy. And there's no registration surge to back it up. And they also, a Twitter user pointed it out there. I didn't even see it at first glance. They missed an entire age group, 30 to 44. What happened? You don't.
That's my age. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, right. Yeah, that happens to be too the working class, you know, a big group for the working class. So, you know, it's a major, major problem that somebody wouldn't shame a poll that missed an entire group of voters in an age group. It's crazy.
And these narratives, what you were saying, and I was listening to this, these narratives are political. And these polls are political. This is, I think, an important point that you would defend entirely. And what you just said, Trump's winning working class men, right? And he's winning working class Hispanics, right? And he's not winning working class Hispanics by offering amnesty, right? So the Republicans, for as long as I've been alive, the narrative was, in order for Republicans to win, the working Hispanics, they don't say working class, they say Hispanics. In order for Republicans to win Hispanics, we need to do a massive amnesty and we need to have open borders. And then, just then, they're all going to be, you know, really gung-ho for 10% capital gains rates and a flat tax and free trade, right? But this is the ticket, right? Yeah. And Trump kind of upended that because he said, I'm going to be really hardcore on borders, but I'm going to speak to them not as Hispanics, but as working class voters. And I'm going to make the assumption, this is crazy, so stop me if I'm spouting gibberish, but I'm going to make the assumption that working class Hispanics, working class black men, working class white men and women want good wages, want decent jobs, want to be able to provide for their family. They want good schools. And these identity issues are secondary. Trump made that assumption and he won them better than past Republicans. And he's winning them better than past Republicans. So the polling narrative is political, okay? Yeah. Because they want to control thought and to say, somebody like Trump, they don't want him to win, not because they're worried about what he says, right? And he says some gross stuff here and there. It's nothing to do with that. It's about the narrative. He destroys the Republican establishment's entire operating platform. And I'll say one point, and this is something I harp on all the time. Ted Kennedy murdered a woman. Okay. Bill Clinton most likely raped two women, Kathleen Wiley and Juanita Broderick, right? George W. Bush started a war in Iraq that killed over 500,000 Iraqis. Okay. So all this talk of civility, Trump has never started a war and Trump never murdered a woman. All this talk of civility is nonsense. It's a fig leaf for the power politics and for the agenda, right? Well, I'll turn it over to you because I don't want to get. I'll start going. I got to stop.
Yeah, that's something I always found to be like this ludicrous theme that they harped on, right? I don't get in my own personal stuff, but, you know, I never really bought into the Iraq thing. I was living, you know, in the Northeast when 9/11 happened. I'm a native New Yorker, you know, we moved. I was like working class Italian, right? You know, New Jersey. We were there. So I was gung ho about doing something in response, but never really signed on to the Iraq War and kind of watched that whole thing become a debacle. But I get what you're saying, and I never really bought it because on the big things, right, which is more important, attitude and how presidential someone can act, or whether or not they sacrifice a 500,000 Iraqis on the altar of some like theory and philosophy.
And right? American troops, right? 5,000 American right. lives, which really right. makes me mad because those troops are coming from Trump Northeast Ohio.
Yeah, they Sorry. Are. That's no, you're dead on. Those are for those of you who've never served in the army who are watching, and most of those boys, they come from the middle of America. But this is something that always stuck with me in 2016, and maybe we'll start doing this again. But at first, I'll be honest with you, I knew I had some, because my own life experiences, I knew Trump's appeal when he would talk about immigration. It really had nothing to do with white people or, you know, what color you were. I had, you know, friends, if you were working class, you understood what Donald Trump was saying, right? Or at least if you had working class roots. But even still, I didn't realize what was going on out there until we put these open-ended questions. And because I was trying to find out why some of those attacks in 2016 just were not sticking. And I'm sure you remember, it was just one thing after the other. We would track it, and maybe he'd dip a 2 points, 3 points for a couple of days. Hillary would bob up a little bit, maybe get a 4 point lead, 5 point lead, and then it would evaporate within a day or two. And I was trying to figure it out. So we asked open-ended questions, and some of the stuff I read was just eye-popping, right? So I'll never forget some of them. And one that sticks in my mind is a woman who described herself as moderately liberal, and she lived in East Lansing in Michigan, voted for Bernie Sanders, and chose Donald Trump. So when I saw it, because I'll scroll through them at the end of the night. I'm superstitious, but I'll scroll through them and look at, right? And I want to wait until everything's collected because I don't like to read too much into it. But I always peek. I'm a peeker. So I'm looking, and I saw it, and it caught my eye. And I opened up her individual response and started looking at it. And she wrote like a paragraph. And it was amazing because people don't really do this, right? But she wanted to know. She wanted me to know why that she was doing this. And it was pretty much everything you just said. And it was that, you know what? Hillary is a horrible person, as in most of these people are horrible. Yeah, Trump's not a great, you know, he's not, I'm not got no delusions, but at least I feel like he's going to do what he said he's going to do. And P.S. I'm from Michigan, so I know what he's talking about. They hollowed out my neighborhood, you know, and it was this whole paragraph. And a couple of responses like that, I think, will stick with me forever. I'll never forget them. And it really makes you think. And this election is really about whether a woman like that understood what she was asking for in 2016. So do Americans in certain groups who gave Trump the thumbs up in 2016, did they realize what they were asking for? And then do they have the resolve to kind of keep going, right? So you want to change. You got it. We could go back to nation building if you want. We could go back to shipping jobs overseas if you want. And I think Trump, to some extent, failed to make this argument this simply. He had a great convention. It was a great convention. But it really is this simple. And, you know, to tell people, you know, I mean, I'll give you some free advice. It really is this simple. I know it's hard, but do you really want to go back to that? 500,000 dead Iraqis, 5,000 dead U.S. troops. Right? And we do the opium survey every year, 17, 18 years later, and opium production in Afghanistan has gone from 180 metric tons to 9,000 metric tons a year. Right? This is what you voted for me to get to stop, to get rid of, right? Because you're poisoning, the opiate crisis is poisoning our communities. Do you want to go back to that? Because some of Biden's justification really relies on this myth, which is a myth of before Donald Trump, everything was nice. We all acted civil. That's a load of crap. And I think that he has not made it before, you know, he has not made it clear that really before me, it was endless war. Before me, it was your husband's job gone. Before me, they were killing each other in the streets anyway. Remember, you know,
right?
So Ferguson burned before you elected me, right? I mean, he just, it has to be that simple. And right. I think to some extent, he did not, he has not yet, at least. He's got time, not much, but he's got time to make that case. And in a state like Michigan, you know, there are just some people that do see that. And the one, because we asked about trade and we did ask about other things, it seems to me that the, at least to a very important group of voters, the trade changes that Donald Trump made are more important to him than like Joe Biden saving the auto industry. Because if it right. wasn't, if it wasn't, by the way, then Macomb County would not be going for Donald Trump like we see it going. So he did not make inroads with those voters. He just peeled off some of that old Romney coalition, you know. So, and by the way, they're gone, I guess, and self-reported, because in the national poll we ran for the Epoch Times, there was about a 10% crossover vote for Biden. In the Rust Belt, it's nil. And Donald Trump is taking quite a few of Democrats. And that's actually what's keeping it competitive. So it's not that Trump is running up some huge margin with independents. He's got like a 5-point margin in, with independents in Pennsylvania, which isn't really, I mean, that all that different from 2016. What's going on is that he's taking 13% of the Democratic base. He's winning 20% of the black vote. In Ohio and the rest of them, it's a little, you know, every state is a little different. But overall, the six states combined, it's independents are actually roughly even. It's that Trump is only losing 5% of his Republican base now, which is a change. That changed over the last 2 weeks. That didn't start like that. So something is going on that is making Republicans run home.
And so everything you just laid out, right? To me, Trump is only one half of the equation, because the other half of the equation is the Democratic Party is the party that tells the Rust Belt voter, right? Everything we've been talking about. The guy who, you know, his sister is a single mom. His dad lost his job because it was outsourced thanks to NAFTA. Maybe his younger brother is addicted to heroin. Yep. He served in Iraq or Afghanistan. He comes home. The Democratic Party is the party that tells him you have white privilege. You're irredeemable, deplorable, racist. He gets a nice job as a cop to start a family. You're a racist. You're horrible. You're killing black people. You're a murderer. That's the Democratic Party. So to me, Trump has been able to do well, kind of despite himself, because the big narrative, all this polling and all this data, there's a big realignment here. And this is the big theme, I guess, is that guy who was a Democratic Union guy 20 years ago, who voted for Bubba Clinton, right, who was loyal to the Democrats, who would vote for like a senator like a Sam Nunn, right?
Absolutely.
Or like who's the Democratic governor of Ohio? Ted Strickland, right?
Oh, right. Yeah. That's a great example.
He is no longer voting Democrat, and he's going to vote Republican, but he's not going to vote Republican in 18. He's going to vote Republican in 16 and 20. That to me is that's the guy in the nutshell. And that's the big pivot of this election.
And a lot of those polls, and I'll tell you, a lot of those polls are kicking those guys out. They are.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it. I can see it, you know. And then also, too, they're just having, when they do reach them, they kick them out, but they're having a difficult time reaching them. Look, I mean, it really boils down to this. They would not be asking judges in Michigan to allow them to count ballots for 2 more weeks if they thought Joe Biden was ahead by 6 points, folks.
Yes.
Okay? Because they believed Hillary Clinton was ahead. Did you see all of these crazy? Because it's not COVID, because I hate to break it to you. They don't care if you or your grandfather die from COVID. All right. It doesn't bother them in the least. I'm sorry to say. You know, I mean, we're talking about people who essentially sent a lot of them to their deaths via executive order in nursing homes. Right. So they don't care about that. This is because they're terrified that Donald Trump is. And I wish he would let me just blow his name up, because it's a big name. It's a Democrat. They are all well under the impression that Donald Trump is going to have a lead in Pennsylvania on election night. And it's not because all of these ballots came in late and they'll count them later. They do not believe that they can beat him in an election like 2020, not just because, you know, on the issues. I'm talking about a regular election like we've been hosting, folks, for 200 plus years. You know, well, now it's direct elections. It wasn't around for 200 plus years, but you know what I mean. And they don't believe they can do that. They believe they need all of this time. And they need all of these provisional ballots. And they need all of these. They need armies of harvesters to go out there and get the young kids that don't feel like voting for Joe Biden. They need to nudge those people. They need to get in other people's faces and shame them if they feel, if they have to. They need to get those seniors who, you know, they it's this horrible things that go on with ballot harvesters, you know, and seniors and nursing. So they need it all because you can't leave any vote on the table. If you let Trump do what he did in 2016, his enthusiasm will swamp you. So, you know, in the business, it used to be enthusiasm was good for like 3 points. Well, the last poll from the Detroit Free Press in 2016 was Clinton plus 6. So they didn't feel any pressure. Even if it was true, Trump's base was more enthusiastic. And we're still ahead. We're still comfortably ahead. But that was never true. And in truth, the only reason why we got Michigan correct was because we identified people who were undecided. They had voted Democrat many, many years. They were older, by the way. A lot of people didn't realize this. Michigan was one of those last states with the, you know, people talk about the Reagan Democrats. They had been Democrat for years. And while the rest of white working America was going and shifting Republican, they were not. And they were undecided this whole time. And then at the end, they just broke really hard for him. And then they were not only Democrats, but also independents. And at the end, they just said, I can't do it for Hillary Clinton. I'm taking a chance on Donald Trump. And that's what they did. So that broke heavily for him. All right. I mean, that is what everybody missed. And they're afraid that something like that is going to happen again. Because if they thought Joe Biden had a 16-point lead in Minnesota, we wouldn't see any of this nonsense. They're terrified that the white woman in Kenosha is not going to tell the pollster the truth. Right. And when they get in there, she's going to go with the strong man. And they're going to be sitting with, you know, like 2016 all over again, which is their worst nightmare. And again, it's going to get worse. Just for people who maybe don't know yet, Ruth Bader Ginsburg has died. And they are going the hyperbolic, I don't know what's the over-the-top rhetoric. It's going to be crazy, gentlemen. It's going to be even worse. They will do anything now, anything, if it wasn't going to be the case before.
We're in the end game now, as they say, right?
Yeah.
The end game is for all the marbles.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Michael, I'll kick it over to you.
No, I just want to thank you, Rich, so much for coming on. I hope people tuning in, whether it's live or all the people who are going to tune into our podcast after the fact, realize and have come to the conclusion that polling is not, especially I would say in the age of Trump, and when Trump's on the ballot, it's not, it just to me sounds like it is not easy. It is. And that is why we have these wild fluctuations we're going to be seeing in polling once again this cycle. But I just hope, you know, we're fortunate tonight to have somebody who was right on the 2016 election. And you can tell, like Rich, like you clearly have done your homework and you take your time in these polls and you wait and you made sure, like from watching your program this week, to make sure you got samples in all parts of various states like Pennsylvania. I know you said you were struggling, like in the north central part of the state. So clearly this is it's a challenging time, I would say, for a pollster. But, you know, you're putting out something that, you know, people could take it for what it's worth. But, you know, based on everything you're saying, a lot of it makes sense, especially with Ohio from where we're at. I mean, clearly the enthusiasm in a once extremely strong Democrat. I've never seen the enthusiasm, at least in like the Mahoning Valley before. Yeah. And there's no doubt in my that alone tells me that Trump's going to carry Ohio. And I think it's going to be a big win. But, you know, before you go, just one last thing, you know, please promote your show. I also, before I forget, I want to thank your wife, Laura, for helping put this together. She's in the chat tonight, I see. But tell everybody once again about your show, Inside the Numbers, and your other one, what, Barnes and Barris, is that it? Or do I have the flipped?
Yeah. She's great. Laura's great. And people love her, you know. So I always tell her, I think you're the one they come and to see. Maybe you should, you know, get out there. But, you know, yeah, we do Inside the Numbers. It typically is all 5 days, you know, of the week, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to noon. But with What Are the Odds, that's on now Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. What are the odds with Barnes and Barris?
Right? He's awesome.
He's great.
He's a great guy. I love his Twitter feed.
He really is. I've known Barnes now for years, Robert. Years. And yeah, he's a wealth of knowledge. You know, Laura calls me the cyclocardia or something, whatever she makes this, right? And Barnes is just like that. So we go on these kicks together and it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And he knows history like me. He's a little bit of a nerd like that. We like that kind of stupid little stuff that, you know, in the end can really matter. And it's interesting, right? But normally we do Inside the Numbers for 5 days. Now we're going to do it Tuesday through Friday. And in truth, I probably would have kept going, but we did get at Big Data Poll, we did get the Epoch Times poll. We're polling for the Epoch Times. So if you guys watch the show, then you know, like, I sweat over this stuff. You know, I make sure, I mean, they paid me to do, to give them an accurate product, a good product, a thorough product. And it's a service, you know, and it's very different across the pond, you know, where people still do view it as more like a public service and not what it is here, which is a narrative game, which I'm sad to say is what I believe now and always resisted believing that. I didn't want to be that cynical. I always just figure pollsters, you know, they do their best. Sometimes they're right and they're wrong, but there's enough evidence now, you know, to make the argument that they needed to change and they didn't. They did. And even though they know they're not giving you something that they're 95% confident, right? So they write at the end of their poll, I'm 95% confident that it's within this sampling era and this is the result. No, they're not. And they know it. So that's what that show is all about. You know, trying to, because it's never going to change until we shine that light. It's never going to change. And that's sad. So Inside the Numbers is a small part to do that. Because if we miss again, guys, if we have another big miss, people will never listen to us again. Mm-hmm. I mean, it will be years before we win back the public trust that half of it we already lost.
Yep. Yeah, you bring up a great point. And my fear is that, like, an average voter just going to, you know, open up the newspaper, let's say if you're in Minnesota, and say, oh, Trump's down 16 points. They're going to believe it. And then election day rolls around and he may or may not win it. But let's say it's, again, within 1 or 2 points, just a clear disconnect. So, you know, I strongly encourage everybody, if you want to learn about polling, and clearly in talking with Rich tonight, there's a lot more in it than, again, just picking up the phone, asking some questions. Watch his program. I've learned so, so much.
It's awesome.
I agree. In listening to you on your show today, you're hoping that maybe you could kind of continue this Rust Belt pulling through the election day. Cause I agree. I think it's going to come down to the Rust Belt, and you know, hopefully everybody follows you on Twitter, people's_pundit.
Yep.
And then, you know, after election, would love to have you on, kind of recap how your polling was versus the election results. I definitely think regardless of who wins, I think you've done your homework, and I think you're going to be much closer than these media polls that, like you guys have been saying all night, narrative driven. So, you know, post-election, would love to have you on to kind of recap things, and we'll see if Nate Slimer is, like, if you like to call him, was accurate or not.
That's his model his new that can name. Move
100% in the course of a night.
I know.
Look, what is his new nickname? Nate
Slimer, I call him.
Nate Slimer. You know, that's pretty good. Yeah.
I mean, I'm done playing nice with that guy. I really am. I mean, I've tried, guys, you know, to be, you know, to be nice, to be professional, to be open. It's not what it's about. And sadly, I learned that the hard way, you know, but, yeah, I mean, if you have a model that moves 80%, at 6 p.m. at night, at 6:30 at night, or actually, I think it was like 8 at night, 8:30. That's not a model. That's a poll reading. That is a poll reading operation with an overpaid IT staff. Okay. I mean, that's
100%.
That's all they got there.
Well, listen, if you ever need on the ground intel in the Cleveland, Northeast Ohio area, reach out to us. I will gladly be your pollster. I will gladly drive around town to count the things. You are the coolest dude. I was following you back. I don't have a Twitter account. I'm an old school boomer. I just type it in manually. And I like Ryan Drzewski, I type it in People's Pundit. I type it in, it pops up. And I've been following you for 5 years now. To talk to you is so great. Thank you so much for talking to two dorks out in Northeast Ohio. That was too kind, right? You're the expert.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It was a good talk. Give the Buckeyes my best. I love it.
Okay, we will. Great we will.
Day. All right, we'll see you.
All right, all the best, gentlemen. Thanks. All the best.
All right. And that was Rich Barris. How awesome was that, Dane? Yeah.
We
didn't have him on from the perspective of him being a partisan or anything like that. He's said things on his program, sort of like we have on here, you know, critical of Trump and how Trump can be his own worst enemy. I just wanted that strictly from the point of educating people how difficult polling is, especially in the age of Trump, and how it would not surprise us again that the pollsters could be missing it, because we haven't seen a ton of polling in Ohio. But if there's a poll that comes up from NBC that shows this race tied, you know, it's just not going to happen. Just there's just not enough vote in other parts of the state to offset Mahoning Valley and down along the Ohio River.
Rich is somebody you got to be listening to. You got to be reading him. He is so intelligent. He knows so much. But he's not afraid. This is what I like about him. He's not afraid to call out the nonsense of the other side. First of all, he's not a partisan Republican. It's not like, and you know, if the Republicans are down, he'll say that, right? It's not like the Republicans are going to win every single race and they're going to win California, right? That's nonsense. And he's not that guy. But he's the guy that's willing to call the media out. And he's been doing it for 5-6 years. And to have, this is not fake flattery. To have him on and talk to him is so cool. I remember when he had, I think he had a different icon on his Twitter handle. It was like it's the drawing now, but like his old icon was different. But I still remember following him all the way back 4 or 5 years ago, going back to, I think it was 2015 when I first started following it. So look, Michael, I will say this. What he's saying makes a ton of sense. I don't know if he's right or not wrong, right? We're not going to know until November 4th, right? And so much could change. But what he's saying makes sense in what I'm seeing on the ground. I remember back in 2016 talking to Democrats who were saying, I can't get signs. I don't see Hillary signs. Something's up. And the polls were saying Hillary leading by 6 in Ohio, leading by 4 in Ohio. But Democrats were saying to me, I don't feel good about this race. Something's wrong. And the same thing is happening again in 2020. And Rich comes, and what's really cool is he's like, I got a theory. I got data and a theory. I might be right. I think I'm right. I might be wrong. But this is a different view than what you hear from the mainstream media. And that's why I think he's a really important guy to listen to.
Absolutely. And, you know, his poll came out. In looking at the Epoch Times, I don't see necessarily the breakdown by state. I'd imagine they'll probably be releasing that within the next couple of days. But I wouldn't be surprised, kind of from how he's talking, if it's probably 6, 7, 8 points again, where Trump's up here. We're thrilled to have him on. The wealth of knowledge and his program, I'm telling you, every single day I make sure I have it on. And the one with Barnes, and just so everybody knows Robert Barnes, that's his name.
I think so.
He's probably one of the most successful political bettors, I guess, gamblers, whatever you want to call it, in the country. Is he always right? No. I mean, what gambler or bettor always is? He made some predictions correct in 2018. Others, I think he was wrong on the House, but he was correct on the Senate. But if you really want to dig into how pollsters can miss a certain state, like a Wisconsin, listen to those two go together. It's not just like male, female. They go into ethnic history. They go into the religions of those ethnicities in certain parts of the state and how they vote. It's mind-boggling stuff that somebody like me, who loves data, loves numbers, never in a million years ever would have thought that is an aspect of polling.
It's a Robert Barnes. It's Robert_Barnes_Law. is his Twitter handle. He's another really great guy. He was instrumental in following during the COVID crisis because he's had a lot of good takes on it. So two great guys. We got to get him on. Maybe we'll get him on. I mean, we'll get all these conservative superstars. But Rich was a cool guest. Kudos to you, Michael. I know you did a lot of work on the back end to arrange that. I just asked a billion questions and you're doing all the work. So full credit to Michael Metzinger.
The credit really goes to Rich's wife, Laura. I had just kind of randomly tweeted one day at her, hey, like, would love to have you on the pod, have Rich on the podcast just to talk some Ohio polling once the Rust Belt's done. And she actually had sent a direct message. She listened to parts of some of our episodes and enjoyed it. And the rest is history. So we're thrilled about that. And just so everybody knows, you know, we're less than 50 days out from election day. We do have some other great guests that we're hoping to schedule soon. I guess I'll say some names. So we have Colton Hens, who is a political consultant for Ohio. He spent some time the last couple of years in DC. He's back in Ohio now. Been Facebook friends with him for a number of years. So we're working on bringing him on to talk, I would say, a little bit more about Ohio politics and how it's shaping up from his perspective as a consultant. So we're going to have him on. State Representative Al Catrona is going to be on our podcast here between now and Election Day. So we're thrilled about that. So we'll get to hear his take. Started to finally see some signs for his opponent, which I believe his name's Christopher Stanley locally. So those have started to pop up. And then lastly, who I know is in the chat tonight when we're super excited, and maybe we'll have him on next episode, Gino DeFabia, who, again, for those of you who don't know, he's been a guest on Fox News a few times, featured in the Republican National Convention, spoken in Youngstown. Trump called him on stage. He's a huge advocate, not only for Trump, but I would give him a lot of credit for what he's doing to really push for Christina Hagan. And he's doing a lot to try to flip Mahoning County. And Dane, I don't know if you've been down here. It's just remarkable to see.
They opened a
Victory headquarters this past week, so I watched that. A lot of enthusiasm there. But they have 18 billboards throughout the county. There's a huge one on 224 going east towards the Southern Park Mall. They're all over town. They are making clearly to me a concerted effort to try to flip Mahoning County. And I wouldn't be surprised if Trump, it sounds like from talking to Rich, they have Ohio down. Obviously, you got to go out and get your votes. But if he were to come to Youngstown to kind of shore up that Western PA, try to get some of that overlap from over there. And if they're showing polling that shows it close in this congressional district, I wouldn't be surprised if Trump tried to make that stop here to Northeast Ohio, especially in Youngstown.
Gino is a great American. He's a good guy. I haven't had a chance to meet him, but he's a big fan of the show. And, you know, what's crazy is 30 years ago, if you would have said a show called Mahoning Valley Red for Republican, nobody would believe you. They'd laugh at you. But it's happening. The parties are shifting and the Republicans are becoming the party of the working class. Right. And this is good. And this needs to happen. They need to be the patriotic, conservative, pro-family, pro-working people, pro-nationalism party. That's who they need to be. And the sooner they become that, the sooner they'll win and have a dominant majority that will last a long, long time. Forget Mitt Romney, forget John Kasich, forget all these effeminate, effete, weak people, right? We need strength, right? And that could be strong women like Christina Hagan. That can be, you know, strong leaders like Donald Trump. But we need strength in this country because, you know, I'm going to say one more thing, and I think we should end the episode. Mm-hmm. We received news right before the episode started that Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. And, you know, prayers for her family, you know, God rest her soul. I wish her and her family nothing but the best, right? But the reality is this country is so divided that the passing of an 87-year-old woman can raise the risk of conflict and really deep, deep, deep lasting scars in our country. That's real. And it's going to be a really scary time now that she's passed and what happens and people's reaction to it. Scary in the sense that we can see, I don't think it's crazy to say, you know, something like, I don't want to say civil war, but political dissolution, right? So given all that's been going on, we need strong leaders. We don't have time for weak leaders. And I think we should end this episode with just a thought and prayer for the country, for the family of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, that, you know, no matter what happens, we hopefully recognize that we're all Americans and we care about this country. And there are some communists who we need to kick off into the ocean and deport them to Venezuela. But the rest of us, Democrat and Republican, can and will have to live together. So those are my closing words and comments. I'll turn it over to you, Michael.
No, I agree. And hopefully, you know, people kind of go through the week and kind of at least reflect on her life and her service to the country, regardless of if you agreed with how she interpreted law and some of her rulings for her long storied career. And let's not forget, she was a great friend of one of the right's favorite justices, Antonin Scalia, and they're together again. So I agree with you, Dane. Condolences go out to her and her family on her passing. And hopefully at least this week and we can kind of reflect on that. There's obviously going to be political ramifications. I have great fears after, you know, what we went through with the Kavanaugh hearing and how this is going to play out. Probably maybe on our next episode, we could kind of go into all of that, but kind of just reflect on that. But
and hey, Dems, maybe you shouldn't have destroyed Kavanaugh and attacked him and slurred him like you did, because we're going to fill this seat. Sorry.
and one last point I do want to make before we wrap it up, you know, for people who are listening on our podcast, please, please, please subscribe. If you don't already follow us on Twitter, I've been fortunate enough to get retweeted by Jack Posobiec. Let's just say he's got a million followers and he's a big, I like him because he's a good, solid conservative Catholic. A big voice. The guy is just, I love him on Twitter. So he's retweeted MV Red Podcast on Twitter. So hopefully, maybe one day we could dream, Dane, and we could even get Poso on. But my one last point was kind of taking it back to Mahoney County real quick, because I see Gino in the chat says we're going red. I don't think 2016 was a fluke. And I think 2018 was the reminder that this county, Mahoning County, can flip with the victories of Don Manning, who in 16 lost by 16 points, and he ended up coming back and winning in 2016, and Michael Rooley winning a state Senate seat. This area still has that Democrat lean to it, but Trump's the guy who I truly believe is going to win over those voters, Dan, that you talked about, those white voters, those white working class voters
of all race and colors. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, especially, yeah. I mean,
especially
we have an African American population.
Yeah.
But not like a big Hispanic population, but
no, there's not,
you know, hopefully, you know, we can get some more data out, but interesting times. We're at September 18th. So we're going to have a lot to talk about, and
we
wouldn't be surprised if we have to end up, we'll try to fit it in, but maybe we can make this a weekly thing through election day.
We should, we need to, Michael, people demand it. Okay.
And I'll have to talk off mic with you, but, Kurt, who's in the chat room tonight, did have an interesting idea for, close to election day or around election day that I'll float out there. Maybe we'll talk about that at some point in time. But again, thank you, everybody. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. You learned a lot. Please, please, please go on YouTube right now, People's Pundit Daily, and subscribe and hit the notification bell and watch Rich's show every single day.
We got to talk about the sponsor real quick.
The sponsor
of tonight's episode is Spectrum. Spectrum Cable. Okay. You know, Spectrum, if you're like, hey, I want to overpay for really laggy internet, Spectrum, they're there for you, right? It's a spectrum of quality service, from low quality to really, really low quality. That's the Spectrum. And they're gladly sponsored to be read. I bet they're going to sue us now. So Spectrum Cable, if you want to pay $75 to a monopoly every month, who's going to give you a crappy product and you have no other choice, Spectrum is the company for you. Thank you.
I guess I'll have to throw my own out. And I'm a big fan of Sandwich Factory, so don't take this wrong when I'm about to say a non-local summer sandwich establishment, the Bella Subs in Boardman. We had it for dinner tonight. Sensational. And I believe, Gino, you could probably correct me tomorrow if I'm wrong. I think there's a honk for Trump on 224 in Boardman. So when you're on your way to the Bella Subs, Shops at Boardman Park, make sure you go by 224 in Parkside and honk your horn for Trump. And on that note, we're going to end this episode. So thanks, everybody. Take care, and we'll be back next week with some more good political insight on Ohio and the U.S. in general. So take care, everybody.